This is Advanced D&D, a podcast hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas from WUKY. This is episode 33, and in this episode, well, the world is, it's still doing its thing. So we'll talk about what's going on in the news and catch up on one of my favorite albums of the year. Also, we'll talk, all about the Marvel and Star Wars and other pop culture things happening. That's happening right here on Advanced D&D on WUKY. Well, Dan, I think that every time I introduce this show and I toss it to the news, I'm thinking this is probably going to be the week where we're not really going to have a whole lot to talk about. And that just never seems to happen.
Never been true ever in the history of news. We'll start off with something that is no longer that far away, is the 2022 midterms. We're recording this towards the middle end of November 21. And so we're like a year away from those elections, but things are moving, things are afoot. And one of the things that makes that race maybe less exciting or less nail-biting is the sheer fact that the Republicans very likely will have a lock on flipping the House, not because of necessarily any candidates that they're running for those contested seats. We don't even know all the candidates who are running for all these seats yet, but by the simple fact that they have gerrymandered districts such that they are very likely to flip five seats without even trying. And five seats is exactly the margin to flip the House. The Senate, as we know, is dead tied, so that also is in jeopardy. The fact that it's a midterm year at all means that majority party will usually lose seats. That just happens every single time, no matter who's in charge. And President Biden's approval numbers have been slipping. Yeah, so that's what's happening. So the election year may be not very exciting just in that fact. And B, boy, the Republicans have always been really, really great at kind of planning ahead and this long-term, scary strategy of gerrymandering to where we can start calling races without knowing who's even running.
Yeah, and one thing that I have kind of been concerned about, like I saw it happening, in the 2016 election, is there are longtime Democrats and Republicans who are stepping down and not running for re-election, making seats that have been kind of locks for either party now up in the open. I saw recently Jackie Speier from California announced that she was going to, not run for re-election. And I think that in the grand scheme of this conversation, it's interesting to see what will shake up. And I think that right now our country is in such a, it could go either way in both extreme directions. So it'll be interesting to see, what's happening. I think that what I'm looking at from a non-political side, though, is how many of these people you can kind of point at and say, oh, they're definitely running based on all the book tours that they're doing, all the people that came out of the 45 administration that are now writing detailed memoirs about everything, selling books before they get into office. So it'll be interesting. But I'm a little worried about it moving forward.
Yeah, two other sort of related pieces of news. Patrick Leahy, Democratic senator from Vermont, is also stepping down. He is currently at early or mid 80s, I think the oldest serving senator in there. So on the one hand, yes, it is time to retire. One should not be in government for decades and decades and full generations. On the other hand, we're losing another Democratic seat there. And then in semi-related news, and this kind of leads up to our next piece, Matt Gaetz from that human garbage can from Florida has said that if acquitted, he is planning to offer Kyle Rittenhouse an internship in his office. And I have nothing more to add to that one. Speaking of Kyle Rittenhouse, his trial is still underway right now. I believe the jury is looking at things. That one, I've been reading up quite a bit on, and that one is way, way more complicated, I think, than anybody really can imagine. It is not a very straightforward case whatsoever. There are so many elements that go to either side, to the prosecution or the defense. The one thing that concerns me the most is the judge in this case, starting with pretrial when he, I don't know if it's called a motion, but he basically said that we could not refer to the people killed as victims, but we could refer to them as rioters. And to me, if that doesn't show prejudice right out of the door, I really don't know what does.
Well, and, you know, just kind of in that same vein, look at when they were trying to decide who got to, you know, which jurors would become alternates, who got to pick those out of a box? Kyle Rittenhouse. And when the judge was asked about it, he was talking about how in a previous case, you know, they're, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, I did this one time and, you know, it ended up being, you know, picking the one black juror. And, you know, I thought that that was a problem. So I decided to do it this way. And in this trial, once again, there is only one black juror. And, you know, I have not been paying super close attention to this case for my mental health because I have a feeling how it's going to go. And, you know, it just kind of brings me back to the question that I ask a lot is how many more people have to die before people really understand that this is a problem? How many more people do we need to make a hashtag or, you know, all kinds of things of violence happen before it's like, oh, well, it's long past time before us, you know, to pass this legislation and do these kinds of changes. And it's exhausting. So, yeah, I'm like, I want to stay optimistic about this trial, but everything around it right now is not having me feel that way.
Yeah, it's it makes me also realize, too, like what on the surface, philosophically, politically, culturally, we may see as right and wrong is much more complicated in a legal sense, because legally, we're not asking the question, was Kyle Rittenhouse a good or bad guy? We're not asking, should he have been there? Those are all kind of irrelevant to the case. It's more a question of like, who shot who after what and when, what constitutes self-defense. You know, to me, the most interesting question is his being there at all armed. Like, how does that play into, you know, do you show up to a place to defend yourself? You bring a gun into a situation that you didn't have to be in at all. He voluntarily came from out of town to this situation that he obviously knew was volatile with, you know, a deadly weapon, and then claim self-defense. That it doesn't pass the smell test, but again, I'm not a judge, I'm not a jury, I don't know the law the way this applies in this case, so I think it is going to be complicated. I will not honestly be surprised by any version of a verdict that comes out of this case.
Well, and you know, just the fact that he tried to say, oh, well, I was going to be a medic. I mean, a medic to what? Like, why, if you are going to be a medic, why do you need an AK-47 or an AR-15? That's what he had.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy is just another day in America. Speaking of another day in America, the McMichael and Bryant case, actually, at the time of us recording this, the defense in the trial of the three men who murdered Ahmaud Arbery, their defense just rested. And earlier today, Roddy Bryant Jr. Tried to seek a plea deal that the prosecution quickly denied. And the other day, basically, were asked by the prosecution, you know, did he pull a gun on you? Did he pull a knife on you? Was he just running? And they said he was just running. And I think that this might have a stronger case of maybe actually resulting in actual justice. But again, history has shown me time and time again not to get my hopes up. So I'm, again, optimistically looking at this from a very far, far away point.
Yeah, that one to me feels much more straightforward. But then again, you know, stranger and less fair things have happened. The thing that I really do hope that Americans take out of this, looking at that case, is being able to draw a very deliberate, obvious, and not at all controversial, I think, direct line between what they did and the entire history of lynching in this country. To me, it's so unambiguous and it's so obvious that it's galling and shocking, but there are obviously still plenty of people who will deny those connections.
And one more piece of a day in America, the two men who are currently in jail for the assassination of Malcolm X have been, for the most part, let go. There's been new evidence that has been released that they were not part of it in the way that they were, which also implicates the Federal Bureau of Investigations, which this would not be the first time that they were part of an assassination of a historic civil rights leader. I really just, again, like it feels like we're just going in circles with all of these things. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to hop on my soapbox here for just a minute, Dan. You know, I don't know if you know this about me, but I am a fan of the Los Angeles Lakers. I have been since the first time I ever watched Kobe Bryant play basketball. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is one of my favorite basketball players of all time. And, you know, since when they left the Forum in the 90s, they moved to what became the Staples Center. And it has been the Staples Center for quite a while. Well, on December 25th, the Staples Center will no longer be the Staples Center. It will be the Crypto.com Arena. Which, especially given its location in Los Angeles, having anything with the word crypto or blood O is probably not a good call. But I just want to just think about this for a minute, because we even have the problem in Lexington with like Kroger Field. If you're going to buy the rights to something, like, come up with a good name. Don't just name it after your product. I don't know. I don't have enough money to buy the naming rights of anything, but it just seems like if you're going to spend that much money, you should at least come up with a good name.
Yeah, but my counter argument, my good man, is if you're going to spend that much money, it's going to be named after me. You know what I mean? That's the mentality. And why wouldn't you, if you were Kroger or Yum Brands or any number of these corporations that can afford to pay for the naming rights, of course you're going to name it unambiguously after the company that you are. So I'm sorry, you're going to be on the losing side of history on this one.
Well, you know, my counter argument to that is where the 49ers used to play football, which is also the stadium where the Beatles played their final concert in 1966. Candlestick Park had many different name changes. I guess the final one was 3Com Park, but everybody in the Bay still referred to it as the Stick. So maybe this might be, you know, one of those situations, but I probably am not going to be right about that. And yeah, I should get my like radio voice to be like, here at live at the crypto.com arena. No, not at all.
Just not going to do it.
Well, let's move into music. There's a couple things I want to talk about, but you know, over a couple weeks ago, there was the incident that happened at Travis Scott's very large festival, Astroworld, in which multiple people were injured and killed. You know, there's a lot to unpack here, Dan, and I want to just pass it off to you.
Yeah, it's interesting. The more I read about it, the more it feels like Travis Scott has had kind of a history of similar-ish incidents where he's either ignored or been a bit on the irresponsible side, especially, you know, you're the person on the stage. I think you do get to make that ultimate call. And whether or not you do, you kind of end up taking the responsibility for it because you're the person on the stage performing. And there have been circumstances like this where the performers weren't aware of what was happening in the crowd. That's one thing. If you don't know what's happening and until it's brought to your attention, you stop the show. But when you are aware of it or you're dismissive of it, I think that's where the real responsibility kind of comes in. And I don't know in these situations if you were a producer or the organizer or the manager of the actual performance, for example, you were aware of the situation. The performer was not aware of the situation. Like, do you as a producer have the authority to pull the plug, to cut the lights, to stop the music in that circumstance? I don't know.
Well, I have a lot of experience, as you do as well, with events, not necessarily of that magnitude, but, of events where there is music and other things, or just a big event in general. And there are a lot of moving parts to get you from the idea out of someone's head to the actual, day of the festival or event. And it's a lot of moving parts. And there's a lot of responsibility that falls on a lot of, on many different people. And I think that from an artist standpoint, like, when you show up, you want to be able to focus on what you're doing and give, the very best performance that you can. And also, I've been part of festivals where musicians who play at the festival are also part of that, and they wear different hats. They know when it's time to be like, all right, like, I'm not performing right now. I need to make sure that these things are happening. And for someone like Travis Scott, who has a very large platform, like, if you don't want to do those things, pay somebody who will, because the lawsuits are coming, my man. Like, it's going to happen. And, like, would you, especially given the fact that people lost their lives at this, and we're still in a pandemic, like, there's a lot of responsibility on putting together an event. And if you're not willing to put the time in and the energy into it, you don't need to be doing it, or pass it off to someone else.
Yeah, I think ultimately the answer is do the right thing. I think the right thing in, like, the larger sort of human perspective is always going to be the right thing, even if all you were concerned was about publicity or blowback or controversy or whatever. If you had done the right thing and stopped the show, and, then the narrative would be like, oh, this tragic, accident or just crazy circumstance happened, but they handled it the best they could and potentially, prevented more loss of lives or injuries, and it is what it is, as opposed to this thing happened and the people involved seemed so callous, like they wanted the show to go on and keep making their money and pretend it didn't happen. That's not a great look either.
And I mean, look, I have been at things where there have been some shady people, like, running the show. And, fortunately, like, you there is a spot where it's like, all right, like, I'm not doing this again. Like, you're not responsible. But ultimately, when it comes to putting people in danger, like, yeah. Well, on a brighter note, a little bit close to where we are here in Lexington, up north in Cincinnati, they have released, or I guess created, a Cincinnati Music Walk Hall of Fame at the Greater Cincinnati Airport. And several Cincinnati musicians have got some love, including Otis Williams, who is the last surviving member of the original lineup of the Temptations, the Isley Brothers, and of course the one and only Bootsy Collins. Now, why did I end with Bootsy Collins? Because we're segueing right into This Week in Anderson .Paak, and Bootsy Collins has had a hand in what I like to call the album of the year. And Dan, I will go ahead and pass this one off to you.
For once, I have something to say about This Week in Anderson .Paak. I also checked out the new Silk Sonic album, An Evening with Silk Sonic. And yes, Bootsy Collins introduces the album, and I think he's credited with coming up with the name of the group as well, if I'm correct. This album is just a jam throughout. I kind of wish there were more upbeat sort of party songs than ballads for my taste. Listening to these croony, sexy, silk nightgown falling off the shoulder, pomegranate eaten, seduction songs kind of by myself in the car is always a little bit weird. I'm not sure how to feel about it. I feel like I'm having too many weird erotic thoughts by myself, on my commute. So that doesn't make any sense. But some of the more upbeat songs I really, really dig, including Skate 777 and particularly Fly Like Me. That's been a real earworm that's kind of in my head. It also, I also have like a slight, I wouldn't say even embarrassment, but like, I don't know that I want to like sing those lyrics like in front of other people, because then I sound really obnoxious, like I'm kind of conceited. But that's kind of part of the shtick of the album in a way, is I think they're very winkingly throwing back to this very unironic, unself-examined sort of soft machismo, if you want to call it that. It doesn't have any of that sort of really violent, aggressive swagger that comes with machismo in music, but it's all sort of braggadocious in the lover, not a fighter kind of vein. But overall, I really enjoyed it.
Very much a putting 100 on 10 kind of situation of exaggerating. Okay. So I'm going to tell you, Dan, I bought this album 3 different times. I bought the explicit version, I bought the clean version, and when I bought the explicit version, it was supposed to come with a digital download, but it didn't. So I bought the digital download of the explicit version, that's what I've been listening to as I wait for the physical copy to show up in the mailbox. As I have told you, like when I heard about this project, like I was really, really excited for it for a lot of different reasons. But the reason why I will call this, you know, my pick for album of the year is there are a lot of great albums that have come out this year, but I don't know that there have been as many with the level of like anticipation for really sticking the landing. And that is what happened with this record. As you said, like sonically, it definitely sounds like, it came out of the mid 70s with lyrics of today. And it was done in a way that you could tell that they cared, especially with having the amount of time doing it through the pandemic. There was a lot of love and a lot of work that went into this album. And as I kind of like started browsing through liner notes, you know, I saw that Babyface helped out on a song. There's a collaboration with Bootsy Collins and Thundercat, which is probably one of my favorite songs on the record. But it really, there are no skips for me. And I also read in a Rolling Stone article that I guess there was a politically charged song that they had recorded for the album that they decided to cut because they wanted this to be very much just like an experience of an evening and the way that the vibe is. So they wanted to stay consistent with that, which, I mean, you know, it's cool. I hope that maybe we get a single for this at some point. But I am pretty satisfied with the 9 songs that we got, and you know, having Bootsy Collins be given love in this way just brings me so much joy, because Bootsy Collins is a really important person musically in my life, and anytime he gets some love is a good thing. So that is I can go on this for 20 minutes, but I think I'm going to stop myself.
Yeah, I will say one thing about this album. I looked up a couple of little critiques or reviews of it, and some of the critiques of this album are that it's very slight, it's inconsequential, it's, you know, not, important or substantive. And to me, that's like criticizing Kettle Corn for not being sophisticated or nutritious. Like, that's not the point. Kettle Corn is delicious, and you eat it at the state fair and you eat it on the street because it's delicious. You might regret it if you have the entire big bag of it, but that's okay. That's what it is. It's sheer enjoyment, and I think we could all use a lot of it.
Well, and you know, I saw one review that had talked about how I was like, well, this really lacks funk. I'm like, well, first of all, like, it does not
wrong,
right? Yeah. Second, like, if you're talking about that mid 70s, there was a lot more black music than just funk. There are lots of different kinds of funk. There was a lot of different kinds of soul and R&B, which, like, there's, you know, like Fly Like Me is very much like a James Brown kind of feel, as like Leave the Door Open is very much like a Gamble and Huff. So like there are layers to things. And if, you know, you think that it should just be bass thumping, well, there's a lot more to that. But one of the things this week in Anderson .Paak that I did appreciate is he did share some texts from his mom about how much she loves the album, talking about how much she loves his voice, and you know, especially the collaboration between him and Bruno. Taylor Swift's new album dropped the same day and is now number one as of our recording. And so Anderson .Paak said that he teamed up with the wrong pop star and is trying to beg Taylor Swift to redo 1989.
Nice.
Well, let's move into TV and movies. There's a lot in the, let's just say in the Disney world, of the properties that Disney owns. They're doing a lot, and I'll pass it off to you.
Yeah, so right now we're in the middle of a Marvel lull, in that there hasn't been anything Eternals was fairly recent, but there hasn't been any shows yet. Hawkeye is about to start up, but we did catch this week a Spider-Man No Way Home trailer number 2, and a whole bunch of little sneak peeks to Disney Plus MCU shows. First impressions of that Spider-Man trailer. The trouble with the time that we're living in right now is too much stuff gets leaked. And try as I might, I keep catching glimpses of things. And I really kind of, I think I need to go on an unsubscribing binge, because I would like to, you and I are not going to have any trouble not knowing enough stuff about MCU stuff. But we could have the potential problem of knowing too much stuff and kind of getting some of our joy spoiled. So I'm going to kind of unsubscribe a lot of stuff so I don't see all this. But it seems like all the rumors are true, that they are multiversing the crap out of this thing and bringing back what looks like the Sinister Six, all the different iterations of these villains from previous Spider-Man movies. So we got Doc Ock with the great Alfred Molina. Looks like Sandman, Lizard, Electro, one or some version of the Green Goblin. Am I missing one there? I think that might be them. That might be the Six.
The joke on the internet is the rent guy from Spider-Man 2. I'm glad to see, like, it's one of those things where, like, Alfred Molina definitely kind of, like, spoiled things when he got cast. So did Jamie Foxx. Willem Dafoe has been pretty silent about most things, and I don't know that we've heard anything from Reese Fonts or Thomas Hayden Church, but I'm excited about this, and I'm right there with you. Like, I literally texted Russell the other day, and I was, when the trailer came out, and I was like, am I wrong to be underwhelmed? And his response was, if you hadn't seen any leaks, you would be really hype. And I was like, nope, that is 100%. And, like, honestly, I'm really upset with one particular person who did leak pictures, because not only did he leaked pictures with his own watermark on it. And then when he got called out on it, he's like, oh, it wasn't me. Come on, bro. I do think that there's part of it where there is a little bit of information overload sometimes too. But I think that specifically with Marvel, because Marvel is usually so good about these things, this is what's disappointed. But Spider-Man is my favorite superhero, and I'm still going to be excited and go to see this movie either way.
Yeah. And at least this time it wasn't Tom Holland's fault. Going into some of the little trailers and teasers for all these shows coming up, we've had a couple of trailers of Hawkeye. I basically don't care about Hawkeye. I like the angle that they're going with this, introducing Kate Bishop. I think Hailee Steinfeld is a great casting choice for this. Vera Farmiga is in there, who's a great actor. And I don't know if they're going to do the whole Miss Mask, Madam Mask, storyline with her. It looks like they're definitely playing with some of Matt Fraction's run of Hawkeye. So while I don't care about Hawkeye, this looks fairly fun and light. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm also excited to get to see Echo, which would be the second deaf actor in the MCU and the kind of ties to potentially maybe bringing back Daredevil, because Disney did announce that they are working on a new Daredevil show, and hopefully, you know, we'll see some Vincent D'Onofrio or something. But I'm also excited for Lucky the Pizza Dog. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it, and especially given that the reason that it's dropping on November 24th is so that we can get Book of Boba Fett before the end of the year. They're dropping those two episodes, and you know, I'm looking forward to it, even though I'm not gonna sit here and say that Hawkeye is my favorite. But I'm gonna eat it up too.
Yeah, and if you bring back the Daredevil world, you got to bring it back Madame Wu. You know, anytime there's an old Chinese lady who's kicking ass and running things, I'm all about it. Other teasers included a bit from She-Hulk, our first look at Tatiana Maslany as She-Hulk. From what I could tell, the shots that we saw, it's not the big, huge She-Hulk that we're kind of used to in the comics, because I think in the comics, she's got to be over, you know, 6, 8, 7 feet tall. She doesn't look that much bigger, and she doesn't look super bulky. So it's kind of a, I don't know, realistic version of She-Hulk. And I'm glad they kind of went that way, because Tatiana Maslany herself is not a very large, you know, person. And they, of course, tie in Mark Ruffalo's Hulk with it. They end the trailer on this, a shot of the two of them, and she turns to the camera like she's doing like a cheap local attorney's ad, and she says, "You wouldn't like me when I'm angry." And so I think with those actors involved, hopefully it will have a very down to earth and funny tone. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, and I hope Lou Ferrigno gets to show up somewhere.
Yeah, Lou Ferrigno for sure. We got a glimpse also into Ms. Marvel. That looks fun. We didn't see a whole lot about it, but the casting looks right on. It has a lot of potential. The one that looks very intriguing to me is Moon Knight with Oscar Isaac in it. That sucker looks like a psychological thriller. And I admittedly don't know almost anything about Moonlight, except that he, what, has multiple personalities, right? So that could be very, very interesting. And I think Oscar Isaac's such a fine actor, he can definitely bring that kind of depth.
Yeah, I mean, the multiple personalities, but you don't know which one's the real one. And that's kind of, you know, the part of it in the comics. But yeah, I was super excited when I heard Oscar Isaac was cast. I mean, especially I think there's an opportunity to tie that back into what we saw in Eternals and potentially with Blade. And then Secret Invasion, I'm also excited about, because, you know, give Samuel L. Jackson all the money to just come back and keep being Nick Fury.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and literally with that one, all we saw was just one shot of a very grizzled, battle-worn looking Nick Fury looking at the camera. And I think he had a full beard and it looked kind of white, which if you've been through the stuff that dude has, you'd prematurely gray as well.
Well, you know, on my end, you know, I've been wrapped up the season finale of Doom Patrol, you know, the DC show on HBO Max. It is weird and entertaining and an interesting take on some cool comic book characters. I would definitely recommend it. And The Flash started back this week with their first part of the Flash Armageddon. We'll see how that goes. But things I want to talk about, obviously Book of Boba Fett drops on November 29th. Looking forward to that. But I watched The Harder They Fall. And Dan, I am, you know, it's one of those things where growing up as not white people, right? Like, I think that we take for granted, like, how little we get to see full representation of ourselves in movies. Like, that the only, like, white people in the movie were in the white town that was all white and painted white and everything. But just, like, from the lighting to the music, everything was just so good. And, I mean, you know, it is a Western, so, like, you can't really, you know, you can't really take it too deeply. But what were your thoughts about it?
My initial thoughts were that it was too slow. It didn't need to be 2.5 hours and so many sort of introductory, here comes the posse cool shot where, you know, the five horse men and women ride into the shot and the music is soaring and then they like ride forward, or like the back and forth, like two people might be about to have a duel, like 110% Western tropes. It felt a little bit overbaked and overdone initially. About midway through the movie, it just started to really grab me, and I was just like cool with all of it. Suddenly, it was just like, okay, this movie is trying to be cool, and that's fine. And it paid off with this very extended action sequence of inventive, fun, interesting, you know, shootouts and people on the roof and hand-to-hand combat between Zazie Bates and Regina King, which was great. The casting up and down was terrific, although I was hoping to see a few more alumni from The Wire. There are too many great actors from that show that really need to be in more things, not just Idris Elba, who is fantastic. Jonathan Majors has come out as a really interesting young hero of late, being in lots of stuff, including the MCU and Lovecraft Country. And his face to me has he always has this look like he has a really difficult decision to make, but he's trying to play it off and not let you know that he's struggling with it. And he's covering with a little bit of humor, but it's always like he's carrying a lot of weight that he doesn't want to show, which is such a great sort of vibe. But the music is fantastic. I know you have some thoughts about the music.
Oh, the music was, I mean, like when that Fela Kuti track started in the middle of the fight between Zazie Beetz and Regina King, like I was here for it. But you know, the music in outside of like the actual selections of songs, a lot of the music was written by James Samuel, who directed and helped write the film, and you might know him, at least his brother, because his older brother is Seal. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. And, you know, I also loved that we got like a new Lauryn Hill song in there. I think that, you know, I grew up watching a lot of Westerns. Like I grew up watching Bonanza and all that stuff. And so like there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of Western tropes in there that were not like the overdone kind that were like, oh, okay, this is fine. But I really also loved that, like, the language, just the intentionality of words that were used in this film. You could tell that the script was very crafted intentionally. You know, shade at Quentin Tarantino for, you know, using gratuitous use of the N-word, was not used in this movie at all. And, you know, another part of it is like, yes, these cowboys, cow people were all, you know, descendants or born into slavery, but that was not a part of the film at all. You know, and I don't know, it just felt like, to me, I just really was like, man, this was awesome. Like, this was really cool to watch.
It felt in a way, even though these characters, I think by and large, were based on real people, the story itself is 100% fiction. It felt a little bit the way when we first saw Wakanda on the big screen, in that it is kind of fable-like, right? Like they live in this world that didn't really exist, and all these characters, all these people didn't actually interact in this way and weren't larger than life in this way. But in a way, except for that one scene in the white town that was literally painted white, and the subtitle, I think it was called Maysville, and then it said, boom, a white town. Aside from that one, and really literally one interaction that kind of hinted at race, it kind of didn't exist in this world. It was just like black cowboys in a black world, you know, with their own personal vendettas and motivations and stuff. So the other part of it too, to me, that felt fable-like, you talk about language. There were a couple of short musical performances within the movie itself, like some ladies singing in brothels, and the lyrics referred to things like separate but equal, and made some like little word plays about sort of things within civil rights history that obviously had not happened yet, that I thought was really interesting. And the way they spoke to each other was definitely not, you know, 100% true to you know, 150, 200 years ago, but still felt like very real. I initially took issue with the fact that everybody's clothes were so clean and bright and nice. And I was like, there's no way you're living out here in this world and you're staying that clean. And then eventually I kind of just went with that as well. I was like, no, this is kind of a fable and everybody looks friggin' good. And that's the point of it. So like, yeah, I'm cool with it.
And one other thing that I will say is like, I really love that a lot of Black filmmakers and TV show and showrunners, like they do this on Insecure and Black Lady Sketch Show and Atlanta, bringing back actors or, you know, people from like beloved Black media. Like Delroy Lindo is an absolute treasure. It was wonderful to see him. And of course, you know, Damon Wayans Jr. was in it. And, you know, just also love to Regina King because she's just so magnificent. But it's really wonderful to see the, you know, to be able to watch something like this and be like, that there was a lot of time put into this, but also within that, there's still a lot of love given to what came before it. So that's, yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, highly recommended. That's on Netflix. One thing I wanted to touch on real quick, I'm a huge NPR podcast listener, and one of my favorites is Pop Culture Happy Hour. And this week, NPR's book editor, Petra Mayer, died very suddenly. She was in her mid-40s, and I listened to a Pop Culture Happy Hour remembrance of her by a lot of her colleagues, and she guested on that show very frequently to talk not just about books, but other pop culture things. And it made me really realize like what a, not just a life well-lived, but somebody who has contributed to the world in terms of cultural criticism and journalism and how powerful that was. And I didn't know her at all, obviously. And she wasn't even necessarily somebody I paid a lot of attention to. I just knew her name. But hearing folks eulogize her, and not just eulogize her, but really tell funny stories about her and her life, it makes me just really value, you know, how much we all have to contribute in life. And this sounds weirdly about me, but like, that's how I would like to be remembered. I would love for people to be able to gather around and tell funny stories about me and why my presence would be missed. So that's a great episode to listen to. And Petra Mayer was a great contributor to NPR.
You know, NPR pretty much is a tight-knit family, and it was a wonderful thing to see, for sure. Well, moving into books, the one thing I've got this week is Marvel announced that they're going to do a What If series specifically around Miles Morales, so I'm super excited about that, and that's all I've got for it. Moving into food, Dan, you know, we're nearing the Thanksgiving holiday, and one thing that I have missed over the last couple of years, my cousin James, my cousin April's husband, every year does two turkeys, and I went to a Friendsgiving that he was at not too long ago and got to eat some of that turkey, and he usually does a dry rub. And a smoked turkey. So that's my overindulgence for that.
Yeah, one turkey is usually too much for me. I don't know if I can handle two turkeys. Last Thanksgiving, mid pandemic version 1.0, we had Thanksgiving fairly small. We had our parents and one friend over, and we set up on our front porch in the fairly chilly late November weather and had a thing, and it was fine. We did what we did. Nobody was vaccinated at the time. This year, everyone I know and everyone that I would care to see are vaccinated and or even fully boosted. We are actually traveling out of town to go see family for Thanksgiving in warmer climates in San Diego. Please, thoughts and prayers for us in the flying department, because flights have been so jacked up lately and just are terrible, and delays upon delays. So hopefully we will get to San Diego within some reasonable amount of time this year.
Traveling during the holidays, not in a pandemic, was already difficult. So best of luck to you. Well, moving into pandemic advice, you know, we have our usual thing, but Dan, what's yours this week?
Well, the biggest news is, as of this recording, the FDA has approved boosters for all adults in America. A lot of states were already kind of coming at it. I think Bashir got ahead of that by a day or two, approving it. I actually have mine scheduled for the afternoon of this recording. I think you've already been boosted. Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah. So it's one of those things, like, you know, I constantly read stuff about, like, is it effective? How much good does it do? Blah, blah, blah. And you know what? It doesn't not help. So if you can go get boosted, go get the booster shot. It's going to make you feel a lot better. Surround yourself with other people who believe in science and want to protect each other. And I think you just have a better time if you hang out with vaccinated people in a multitude of ways.
Yeah, and my advice for this week is in a similar note. You know, let's keep us from not having two pandemics at the same time. Get your flu shot. I was planning to get mine when I got my booster shot, but they were running in short supply, so I had to come back. But if you, like myself, had to wait, make sure you wait 4 weeks in between vaccinations, but you can get them at the same time. But, you know, just do what you can to stay healthy. And with that, it brings us to a close. This has been episode 33 of Advanced D&D, a podcast from WUKY, hosted by Dan Wu and DeBron Thomas. We will see you soon. Take care.
Take care.